very encouraging. Thank you. It is good to be back with you. So y'all got one more presentation left in you? You ready to go? I am really happy to be here, and I'm just going to make an assumption. If you've gotten a ton out of your time here with all the different information that's been made available, raise your hand. Who's gotten a ton out of it? You know, I respect that. You guys, you took the time to get out of your business to work on it. You know, I think the more we work on our business, the easier it is to work in it. And you're working on yourself. I'm on the end of a 15-day speaking trip. We started in North Dakota, ended in Orlando, about 100-degree temperature swing. You tell me how you're supposed to pack for that thing. I did the best I could. I got out of Los Angeles, where I live, just as the fires were kind of encroaching around. I live up there in those mountains, but fortunately, we're north of there. So my wife says everything's still there, and I'll be going back there tonight. And I'm so glad this is the last stop. California, we got some issues, you know. I mean, now the whole world knows. Now the whole world knows about it. And we're going to talk a little bit about leadership today. And, you know, when you have incompetent, uncommitted, narcissistic leadership, there's a compounding effect. You can get away with it for a while, but eventually it will catch up with you. The clock does strike midnight. Now, we are getting a little bit of common sense. Back in November, we had a measure that passed that they can actually start arresting shoplifters again. Yeah, right? Now, why should that be a thing? But it's kind of a thing, you know? It's kind of a thing. And so, and the governor was upset about it. He said, this is not the state I recognize that would pass something like this. It's like, well, governor, we don't recognize a state either since you've been in charge of it, just so you know. But I think when you talk about accountability, it's a step forward to lock up criminals instead of toothpaste and Tostitos. I just think that's a better option. And so we're going to talk. Actually, we're going to do a highlight reel. When Howard and I visited, we said we're going to do a highlight reel of two of my books. Some of you know a little bit about one of them, for sure, Up Your Business. I talked about that the last time we were here. I'm going to share some different concepts with you. And then the new one, Elevate Your Excellence, which Howard tells me you got a handful of them over there. And that one just came out in August. And we're going to talk about highlights, concepts from each one that I think you can find very applicable. If you go back and use it, principles work if you use the principles. Y'all have heard a lot of principles here these last few presentations, haven't you? You know, principles don't care who you are. They don't care where you're from. They don't care how old you are. They don't care if you went to school or not. Principles work for you if you work the principles. But the whole thing is here, sitting here for a few days, isn't going to get us much better till we go back and what? We got to take that action. So we're going to be talking about some specific areas where we can go back and do that. So I want to talk, first of all, about how many of you read Up Your Business or heard me speak about Up Your Business in the past? Okay, that book came out in 2003. Appreciate those of you that raised your hands. It did well, and it came out again in 07. There's seven chapters. I'm going to give you a highlight from each chapter. The subtitle of Up Your Business is Seven Steps to Fix, Build, or Stretch Your Organization. And the first one is a chapter called Always Remember, It's the People, Stupid. And what that is, a gentle nudge, is to remind us we can get hung up with systems and with strategies and with vision and with tactics, but ultimately it comes down to people. It comes down to people that need to execute every day. And so the concept I want to share with you is simply this: a great dream with a wrong team is a nightmare. A great dream with a wrong team is a nightmare. A great dream with mediocre people will still get you mediocre results. And most of us as leaders in my company, and I'm sure in yours, when you look at where you want to go and you look at the team you currently have, there's probably a reality gap between what your team is currently capable of and what you aspire to be. And that's actually healthy. You want to set goals that initially exceed your competence. But to get that goal, we've got to get people better, or we've got to get better people. Usually, it's a little bit of both. We got to get people better. Some people don't want to get better. They could get better. They don't want to get better. It's not a can't do, it's a won't do. But if we can't get people better, we got to upgrade the position. We've got to get better people. And you've just got to get people that are giving you something to work with. You know, we can teach skills, we can teach knowledge, we can share processes, but there's some things inside of folks that they got to bring to the table. And this is where recruiting and interviewing is so important, and so many business leaders I know are terrible at it. They hire out of desperation. I mean, would y'all agree as desperation rises, standards fall? Isn't that true? I've been in that situation. The more desperate you get, you start to compromise and rationalize. As desperation rises, standards fall. It's true in hiring. It's true in dating, too, isn't it? Some of you found that out in your life, haven't you? I mean, the closer it gets to closing time, you're giving the room a second look and stuff that wouldn't have passed the muster a few hours ago, you know. And then the next day, you're wondering what you got yourself into. And it's the same when you hire the morons and the misfits and the moochers out there. I mean, they're out there. So we got to close that gap. Now, and then I've spoken in 49 states, and I've spoken in 21 countries. I don't know, I don't know why they don't want me in Idaho. I mean, I would love to, I think I'd be a good fit for Idaho. I mean, I'm not a very good fit for California because I don't see the things the way most people do. I rarely get invited to a party there, never a second time. Well, somebody will say, well, what do you think of this? And you tell them, and it's actually common sense, and it's absolutely a repellent to the people there. It's like, oh, my goodness, this guy's in that job. So you're standing there alone with your bourbon, and everybody's walking by, and it's like, I'd rather be alone than in bad company. So it's not the worst thing ever. But everybody in any state, small, I was in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, Okoboji, Iowa. Doesn't matter if I'm in Detroit, Michigan, Los Angeles, if I'm in New York, it doesn't matter. If I'm in Orlando, Moscow, Russia, Bangkok, Thailand, Hong Kong, people say, you know what, Dave? My area is a little different. There's a shortage of talented people in my particular area. Wouldn't that be a convenient crutch? And it will be if you buy into it. That will be your go-to time and time again for why you had to settle for less than you should have. I don't believe the Creator got ticked off at any particular area and stopped putting talented people there. There's no shortage of talented people in any particular area. The fact is, the most talented, successful, productive, disciplined people already have what? And we're not even looking there. We don't even have a strategy most times to recruit these passive job candidates. People already getting it done somewhere else. We don't have a culture that would attract them or retain them, and that should be part of our recruiting strategy. How do we attract those who are already getting it done? We run an ad, and do you think the top performers in any industry are reading that ad? Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't run them, but you got to have more strategies than that. You got to be proactive. We run an ad. There's statistics that show one ad's bringing the bottom 30%. Of any workforce, especially in sales. I mean, I think that's who's reading them. Who's reading the one ads? The curious, the confused, the mystified, the frustrated, the terminated. People barely doing enough someplace else not to get fired. They want to come roll the dice at your place, see if they can turn their whole miserable life around. Well, that's probably, the odds are likely to be against that. And so the key word for recruiting is proactive. You got to stop waiting to be hunted. You got to start to become the hunter. You'll never build a pipeline of talented people if the only time you're looking is when you need them. And so we have to come up with proactive strategies. Recruiting needs to be a discipline. And then when we find them, we got to make interviews tough. I see interviews today and they're a casual conversation, a good old boy get acquainted session. They're just, they don't look for the right things. They're not intense enough. We make emotional decisions. Number one cause of hiring errors, making an emotional decision during the interview. Usually this happens within the first few minutes. Based on personalities, appearance, stereotypes, biases, you're talking to this person and you begin to either like them or not like them too soon. And you start to make these judgments, this emotional decision. And when you start to like somebody too soon during an interview, you're no longer tough on them. You stop assessing them because you want them to make it. And you like them. We say, well, I really like this guy. But is he competent? There are a lot of likable losers out there. I mean, what have they done? What have they stuck with? What have they overcome? Do they have the things you can't teach them? Did any of that show up during an interview? Character, attitude, drive, energy, talent, the acronym CADET. Is any of that there? Because you can't put in what was left out. You have to draw out what they have within. Interviews need to be rigorous. So my keyword for recruiting, proactive. Keyword for interviews, rigorous. The best time to fire is before you hire. Hiring should be an elimination process, not an inclusive process. You got to go in that tough with standards that high. I walk into an interview, and my objective is this. This should be your objective. The objective of an interview is to eliminate the candidate. You go in looking for a way to say no. Now, you get excited if you don't find it, but that means your standards are high. If you go in looking for a way to say yes, you think you're probably going to find it, especially if you're desperate, and you'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and you'll overlook things, and you will drop the bar to accommodate the candidate rather than hold out for the candidate that will reach your bar. And then we complain, oh, I'm short-handed. Well, let me tell you something. You are better off to be strategically short-staffed than foolishly filled up. You are better off to have fewer people who are the right people, who share your values, who care about what you do, who are willing to step up in the absence of having headcount and get the job done. We got to get this part right, or all the training and processes and motivating and things we do just aren't going to bring the right return. You've all heard the phrase, hire slower, fire faster. Really, that's what I'm talking about here. Hire slower, fire faster. Now, I believe if you hire slower, the firing faster isn't going to be as necessary because you're getting the right people to begin with. Now, I think most people flip this script. They hire faster and they fire slower. They're in a hurry, and then they get the wrong person, and they keep them too long. You agree? You agree we tend to keep the wrong folks too long? I don't think that I've ever terminated somebody and then said later, God, I wish I'd have kept him another 60 days. Usually, it's like, why didn't I do this 60 days ago, 6 months ago, in the case of a relative, 6 years ago? You know, and it gets a little awkward. Any of you ever have to fire a relative, a family member? Gets a little awkward at the holidays. Hey, Dad, how's the job search coming? Could you pass a turkey, please? I mean, it's just a little crazy. Proactive recruiting, rigorous interviewing, keep the emotions out. You know, if you start to dislike the person too soon during the interview, maybe they don't meet your picture of what that position should look like. You have a certain personality you like, a certain bias towards this person, a stereotype against that person. When you mentally check out on them too early, it's just like mentally buying into them too soon. You don't give them a chance. You're not even giving them a chance to make it. You're not even suspending judgment long enough to see what might be inside that person. I had people say, well, I didn't hire him because he was just nervous as heck during the interview. Well, I'm glad he's nervous. I'm going to try to make him nervous. My interviews will rack your nerves. But the fact that he's nervous probably tells me he doesn't do this all the time. Maybe he's not hopping from job to job. He hadn't put in the reps to where he can, you know, master these interviews, hopping from place to place. Get the people right, and everything else starts to fall in place. Get the people wrong, and it's misery on the installment plan. Everybody pays for that mistake. Again and again and again and again. The cost is too high not to get great at this. There are books on this. There are courses on this. This is something that needs to be not just a capability for you to interview. It needs to be a skill. Having the ability to do it, all that means is ability is defined as the capacity to perform a task. A skill is defined as the ability to perform a task particularly well. This needs to be a skill. You're protecting your culture, your brand, morale, momentum, the customer experience, the employee experience, your own credibility, and the financial future of your company. Get better at this or you're going to get beaten a lot. This is a huge win when we can tighten this up in 2025. So that's the first chapter. It's all we always remember, it's the people, stupid. Without that, nothing else changes for long. By the way, the number one, you better look at the leaders. Because the leaders, if the leaders aren't right, it doesn't matter. They're never going to have the right people. You attract what you are, not what you want. You attract what you are, not what you want. On a scale of 1 to 10 as a leader, if you're a 6, you're not going to attract 8s, 9s, and 10s. An 8 or a 9 or a 10 is not going to be inspired to follow a 6. You're not. And if you trick someone into coming to work for you anyway, they're going to figure out you're a 6. And they're going to first leave you mentally and then eventually leave you physically. Had a guy tell me one time, well, my department's filled with losers. I got a bunch of twos and threes. I said, well, that'd make you about a four. I think you got some work to do. Be careful what you say about your people. One thing they all have in common is you. As a leader, one thing, the speed of the leader is the speed of the pack. You let up a little, they let up a lot. You catch cold, they get COVID. That's how it works. I mean, you get better, they start to get better. The second point I want to talk about is your culture. In the second chapter of Up Your Business, I talk about abolish a culture of welfare, this corporate welfare culture, and create a culture of merit. We got this entitlement mindset. How many of y'all see an entitlement get worse over the years? Like a lot worse in your businesses. You know why? Because it's getting worse in society. And trends in business always follow trends in society because the people that work in your business live in society and they're influenced by all this nonsense. And entitlement basically means you think you got something coming that you don't. You think you should be rewarded just for showing up, not for stepping up. That no matter what you do for them is never enough. And that people start wanting a raise because it's a new year. Anybody ever say, hey, you know, man, I've been here another year. You know, I need that raise. Well, we reward results, not requests. So put in writing everything you've done over and above what we're paying you to do and submit it and I'll consider it. Well, you'll never hear from that one again. Because they don't want the raise because they've earned it or deserve it. They want you to celebrate their good attendance. They think they're still in third grade where you get a gold star on the chart for showing up every day. I mean, Jim Rohn said you got to leave third grade. That's why they make those desks so small. You can't stay there. It's like in a culture of merit, we reward what people earn and deserve. Earn means to acquire through merit. Deserve means to be worthy of, to qualify for. Those are strong words, but they're not used as much anymore. Earn and deserve. You got to have, and I'll tell you what, if you want less entitlement, you got to have more accountability. Wouldn't you agree it's a lot harder for people to get entitled if they're actually held accountable for doing what they're supposed to do every day? And if you're not going to hold them accountable, they can actually think they're worth more than they are. They're never hearing anything bad. You never confront them. You never tell them the tough stuff because you don't have the skills or the guts to do your job. So now they start to think, I must be doing pretty well. I never hear anything bad. And now I'm worth more than I'm actually getting. Entitlement's a nightmare. It will wreak havoc on your culture. And so we have to make sure we have a culture where we're rewarding performance, not just tenure. We're rewarding results, not just requests. And you've got to have those standards. You got to give the feedback. You got to have that accountability. I mean, you got to start giving your best to the best and less to the rest. And don't weaken the strong to strengthen the weak. I'm not trying to give the same thing to everybody. If you earn it and deserve it, you're going to get it. And if you don't, you're going to watch them get it. I'm going to try to get you to get it. But if you can't, I'll get someone who can get it. Does that make sense? You ever have somebody ask you for a cost of living raise? I said, the cost of living has nothing to do with the quality of your skills. The cost of living does not make your skills worth anymore. It sounds like if the cost of living's bother you, you better raise the level of your skills, raise the level of your character, raise the level of your competence, raise the level of your consistency. It has nothing to do with the cost of living. The cost of living's making it hard. Get better at what you do. Then it's not so bad, right? I mean, we've got to have this earn and deserve. I've had people say, why did he get the promotion? I've been here 10 years. He's been here 10 months. That's entitlement. You owe me because I show up, not because I stepped up. So you just tell them, well, you didn't earn it. You didn't earn it. You didn't acquire it through merit. You don't deserve it. You're not worthy of it. You didn't qualify for it. In fact, now that you bring it up, I'm not sure why you're still here, you see? I mean, now we have to have the conversation after this conversation to figure this out. I hadn't realized it gotten so bad till you open your mouth and silly sounds fell out of it. And then they stop asking you stupid stuff when you start answering in a way that holds up the mirror. Got to answer in a way that holds up the mirror. And it's rampant. And it's probably not going away. And you'll probably always have a little bit. You'll probably always have a little bit. But if your clarity is strong, you can't have accountability without clarity. And I'll tell you who would prefer you not get too clear about what you expect are your poor performers. Poor performers love gray areas. They love it when there's no winning, no losing, no right, no wrong, no success, no failure. They just show up and go through the motions and pick up that check every couple weeks or so. But clarity will enable accountability, and accountability will help reverse that sense of entitlement that people get. It's a culture. You got to have that culture where, you know what, yesterday ended last night. We got to come in and prove ourselves over again every day. Now, that has to start with you. That has to start with you. You can't let your victory laps turn into marathons or your pats on the back turn into massages either. You got to come in and prove yourself over again every day. If yesterday was a great day, that's awesome, but it's over. Yesterday ended last night. You don't get to borrow credibility from who you were once upon a time or cash royalty checks from what you did way back when. Success is an installment plan, and we all got to come in and pay that rent every day. We got to pay that rent every day. And a lot of times people say, well, now he's been with me 30 years. He's loyal. You know, he's been with me a long time, so he's loyal. Look up the definition of loyal. Now, you're not going to see anything that says anything about how long somebody's been there. That would be senior. That would be tenure. Don't confuse loyalty and performance. Sometimes they're not the same thing. You look up the definition of loyal, it says faithfulness to one's duties and obligations. Now, if you're faithful to your duties and obligations, to me, it sounds like you're getting the what done? You're getting the job done. And you don't do just enough to get by, just enough to get paid, just enough not to get fired. You do and then some. Whatever is required and then some. That's loyal. Whether you've been here 10 years or 10 months, getting the job done makes you loyal. By the way, if how long someone has been there is going to be your benchmark for whether they're loyal or not, what would that say about the new person? They only been with you a few months and they're out working everybody. They care more than everybody. No, we can't call him loyal. He hadn't been here long enough. Well, I mean, that's insane. But it's no worse than just saying he's loyal because he's cashed your paychecks longer than anybody. Loyalty is not about the amount of time you put in. It's about what you put into the time. What are we putting into the time? Now, I will say this. I love tenured people. I have some working for me, but they still perform. Okay, if I have to start choosing between performance and old time's sake or performance and sentimentalism, I mean, I'm choosing performance. I owe it to the rest of the team and to our customers and to our future. So we gotta get these thinking right here. This entitlement, we can limit it. Now, I think that the concept here, of course, I said each of these has a concept. The main thing I want you to get is clarity enables accountability. And accountability mitigates entitlement. You can't do it without clarity. You can't do it without clarity. Clarity enables accountability. And accountability mitigates. Doesn't totally eliminate, but it will mitigate. It will lessen the effect of accountability. Guy, you got to have clarity. We need absolutes. We're living in an age that is trying to eliminate absolutes. You know absolutes, there's right, there's wrong. There's success, there's failure. There's winning, there's losing. Well, the society is creating these huge gray areas so nobody has to feel bad about themselves. My state's probably one of the worst. By the way, I call it my state. I live there. I wasn't born there. The only reason I'm staying there is because my wife has just convinced me that we can't leave the grandkids. I'm about over them, quite frankly. I mean, I could probably... It's like when they were younger, it was one thing. But you know what? They're becoming too much like my son-in-law. So, you know, it's a... He's sure not going to keep me there. So, oh, yeah, don't get me on this guy now. Don't get me on this guy. My daughter told me, well, Dad, it's hard to be your son-in-law. I said, it's only hard to be my son-in-law if you're soft or stupid. And it must be really hard for him because he's both. I mean, it's so... So, yeah, it probably is hard for him. I guess it probably is hard for him. We just don't have a lot in common. I mean, we're trying. I just like to share with people that if you want more valuables, become more valuable. Jim Rohn said, to get more than you got to become more than you are. You got to become more than you are. You got to become more productive, more competent, someone of higher character. Got to become more consistent. Got to become a better team player. Earn and deserve. If you don't earn it and you don't deserve it, be prepared to go without it. And Vince Lombardi said it very well. He said, there is nothing more unequal than the equal treatment of unequals. Isn't that great? Now, that quote wouldn't be too popular today, but there's nothing more unequal than the equal treatment of unequals. And so get some absolutes. Get some clarity. What are your core values? What is your vision? What is your mission? What are your non-negotiables? You got to have people. This stuff's got to be really clear. You can't hold anybody accountable for. Then they just do whatever's right in their own eyes, and they think it's okay because you're probably not going to hold them accountable because down deep you know you never were clear in the first place. Lack of clarity. I think maybe some of it might be coming back. In California, they've stopped giving failing grades in some of their school systems. Yeah, so kids don't have to feel like they fail. You know, yeah, this pampered age that we live in. Well, the fact is, if you get a failing grade, you failed. You know, now that should motivate you. Failure doesn't have to be fatal, but you got to learn to work through those struggles. If you don't ever have to struggle, if you never have to feel like you lost, you don't get much motivated to get better. We got school systems now with their sports. They've stopped keeping score. We just want everybody to play hard. Well, that's what they do now. They come to work and they don't want you to keep score. They just want to play hard. Don't judge me. They don't want any winners or losers. It's like, brother, if you got the lowest score, you're a loser. Now, you got to change that. But you know, you don't want to make it a trend, but you got to fix it. So how clear are your absolutes? Do you know what your non-negotiables are? Non-negotiable outcomes, non-negotiable processes, non-negotiable values, and non-negotiable daily activities that are most predictive of hitting those outcomes. If they're not clear, you don't have standards, you got suggestions. And there are a lot of companies that think they got performance standards and it doesn't get done and nothing happens. There's not even a conversation about it. And all they really have are suggestions. Prove yourself over again every day. Yesterday ended last night. That'd be a good sign to put up there. And the good people, the strong people, the people who want to grow, they will buy into that. They expect that. We got to abolish corporate welfare and build a culture of merit where people get what they earn and what they deserve. Let's talk about chapter 3, which is develop human capital. So you can hire people, but talent does not arrive fully developed. Would you agree? We got to invest in them. And we got to make the deposits in them. And I want to zero in on training and coaching right now. Training and coaching. The people work part of the job. Some of us get so busy with the paperwork part of the job, we're overmanaging and we're underleading. We're spending more time with stuff than with people. And we lament that the people aren't doing enough, but we're not putting enough into the people. And the concept I want to share with you, and some of you know I've worked, I have a martial arts background, so I know a lot about the mental skills and mental training, and I've worked with 3 different college basketball teams as their mental skills trainer, and I work with some professional athletes in the same capacity. Not how to shoot a basket, but how to shoot a 7th one with confidence if you miss the first 6. How to stay locked in. How to bounce back through adversity, how to work through pain, how to master the moment in front of your face. And I have learned this a lot working with employees, but also working with these athletes. Here's the concept. The depth of your relationship will determine the depth of your coaching. The depth of your relationship with that person will determine the depth of your coaching. If you have a shallow relationship, you'll only be able to say too much to them. You'll only be able to go so far. Shallow relationship, shallow coaching. Deep relationship, you can really push them. You can get more out of them. They got to know that your motives are coming from the right place. They got to know that you're telling them the tough stuff because you care about them. Because it's to help them get better, not to make them feel bad about themselves or to embarrass themselves. The depth of your relationship determines the depth of your coaching. Now, relationships take time. They take work. And this is where we get in trouble. We get so busy administering, we're not impacting. We get so busy polishing a chair with our rear end, sending out memos and emails that we're not out there impacting people, acting as a catalyst, leaving them better than we find them. We're not building the relationships. And I know some people are hard to build a relationship with. Maybe you don't have a lot in common, but you got to put the effort into it. John Maxwell had a good principle. I think he calls it the 101% principle. Find that 1%. You have in common with somebody and give it 100% of your effort, 100% of your energy. That gives you something to rally on. That gives you some momentum, you know. Instead of just focusing on all the things you don't like or all the differences that you do have, you can use this with family members. I'm using it with my son-in-law, quite frankly. Well, we don't have a lot in common. He works in Hollywood, and he's caught up in that mindset. And we can't talk politics. We can't talk religion. We don't like the same sports teams. We don't. But what we both enjoy is a good bourbon. That's something. That is something to build on. Now, when they were dating, we kind of got off to a bad start, trying to build the relationship with them, because I just knew up front, this is going to be a nightmare. I mean, just sometimes you just feel it. It's just not going to work. And so they came over to the house when they were dating and had some nice bourbon. I think it was a Pappy 10. And he said he liked it. He knew what he was talking about. So I pour myself a couple fingers. I pour him one, because I'm not sure if I like him yet. One finger. And, you know, if any of you guys enjoy some nice, subtle stuff, you don't want Coke with it. You don't want ice with it. You want to taste it. It's the richness and the flavor. And here's my first impression. He says, where's the ice at? This is Pappy 10. Where's the ice at? I said, in the ladies' room. Next to the tampons. Why don't you stop by and you can kill two birds with one stone? Now, I did use the right tone and inflection. I mean, I was kind and I was conversational. I mean, we do need to learn how to have skillful conversations. And so we were off to a rough start. Even our 1% wasn't going very well then. But we've rebounded. We've rebounded from then. But you got to put in the work. You got to put in the work. Now, I think we make a lot of mistakes in our training. I used to make these mistakes in our training. I've been talking about this concept a lot lately. I want you to think about how you train your people. Most people train their people for variety rather than for effectiveness. For variety, just to keep it interesting, because we just talked about this last week, rather than for effectiveness. Now, I want you to think about the skills your people most need, the 4 or 5 skills that are most essential for them to create the numbers you need them to create. That needs to take up about 80 to 90% of your training. You need a lot of reps there. If one of those skills is getting people to show up for an appointment, you can't say, it's time for our training meeting. What are we going to talk about? Well, we just talked about appointments last week. Let's talk about something else this week. No. I have a better idea. Let's talk again about getting great at the stuff that matters most that we're not great at yet. You have got to have the repetition. You've got to create the muscle memory. Tense people don't operate well. The only way you get rid of the tension and you make it natural and conversational, whether you're on the basketball court or you're selling something, is when you don't have to think about what you're doing. It just flows. And that comes through the reps. You need the reps. Don't worry about keeping it interesting. Worry about making it effective. And you drill it again and again and again and again. And that builds confidence. We train them on one thing one week and one thing another week. They don't know enough about any of it to feel great about it. So they're still tentative. And tentative people don't play to win. They just play not to lose. They're just kind of covering their behinds. And so we want to get them confident at the things that matter most. And I learned this from my sensei. When I passed my first degree, you got to choose a specialty to go into a second degree. And I wanted to do something very practical, so I wanted to learn weapons, how to take weapons away from people, because I think that's very practical today, especially knives, guns, they put it anywhere and you can take it away, and then how to fight with a knife in case you're outnumbered. And so, very practical. I mean, there's 3 or 4 people, and I'm not a very fast runner. I never was a very fast runner. I don't think strategy is a good strategy, running away. But if I have a knife, I usually carry one on each side of my belt. I can't do it now because I'm traveling. You can just take those knives out, and, I mean, you can just start dropping people, and it's pretty cool. And all of a sudden, now people are held accountable for their actions. And so, well, self-defense, right? I mean, come on, we got to take care of ourselves. And so what he told me was, he said, now, Dave, he said, there's been some things we've worked on that we've trained to the point to where you can get it right. He said, we're going to work on some things now that we're going to train to the point to where you can't get it wrong. And that's a totally different level. And that takes repetition. And that takes muscle memory. Don't just train on the most important things until they can get it right. Train until they can't get it wrong. The only way they can't get it wrong is if they're no longer having to think about it. Because if they think, they can overthink. And that makes them tense and slow and stressed, and they make mistakes. And that takes repetition. So I would wager you could improve your training this year by identifying first the most essential skills and drilling them again and again and again. Building that confidence. Do you know what comes with confidence? Consistency. Most people miss this. People will avoid the stuff they're no good at. But if you're good at it, you want to do it. You feel good when you're doing it. You get a good result when you do it. If you have somebody that's not good at phone calls, I guarantee you, you're always having to chase that person down to make the calls. He feels bad about himself. He gets criticized. He doesn't get a good return. How anxious is he going to be to put himself in that situation? So look at the areas where your people are habitually inconsistent. You probably got to get them better there. And you're going to see the connection between confidence and consistency. I learned this working with a guy at Wisconsin. I won this ring working with Wisconsin, and he was our big man. His name was Ethan Happ, and he was big, and he was strong, and he was great in the paint, and he had amazing footwork. And he could have drawn contact. Those of you that know a little bit about basketball, you know what I'm talking about, right? You want to draw contact. You want to lean in and get that foul so you get to go to the what? To the free throw line. That's where games are really won and lost, at the free throw line. And he never would draw contact. You could almost see him shying away from it, like subconsciously. So the first thing I looked at was his success rate at free throws. And he's a lifetime 50% free throw shooter. Now, I have a guy I work with on the Milwaukee Bucks. He's over 90%. He wants to get to the free throw line. He craves contact. He's leaning in because he succeeds there 9 out of 10 times. Now, for Ethan, think about it. Half the time, 50% of the time he's at that line, he feels bad about himself. He lets the team down. He may get booed. He may cost him a game. And he may get criticized from the coach. How anxious is he to put himself in that situation? Not very at all. And either are your people in the areas where they don't have a high enough success rate. I mean, the Navy SEALs are right. The more you sweat in training, the less you bleed in battle. We got to put in the reps. That's my tip for you training this year, to develop your human capital. Get the reps. Now, people will get tired of certain stuff. They'll say, we're working on this again. This is getting redundant. I'll tell you how to handle it. Until you're perfect, it's not redundant. You're not, so nor is it, so let's work on it again. Let's work on it again. You know what's not redundant? Greatness. Greatness feels pretty good. And the athletes I work with will tell you, sometimes you got to go through some boring stuff to get to greatness. It's not all razzle-dazzle. It's not extraordinary things. It's ordinary things extraordinarily well, becoming brilliant in the basics, doing it again and again and again until you can't do it wrong, and then getting great and winning a lot feels pretty awesome. It's all of a sudden not feeling redundant or boring anymore. Embrace the boring stuff. Embrace the ordinary stuff. The ordinary things, the ordinary basics that create extraordinary results if everyone is executing with excellence day in and day out. And then we have to coach as well. Now, coaching is feedback. There's a lot of different ways to coach, but I'm talking about coaching, giving people feedback. Too many people coach with commands rather than leading with questions. Now, there's a time you got to give a command. Peter Drucker said, if the ship is going down, the captain doesn't call a meeting, he gives an order. Okay, so we're not going to vote about what we're going to do. But I like to lead with questions. I want to get people involved. Leadership is a dialogue, not a monologue. And so I don't like to give commitments to people as much as I like to get commitments from people. So we got to get better at leading with questions. Some of us give far too many answers. We don't ask enough questions. And so I'll give you an example. I like to give real examples. So I was working with another kid at Wisconsin. I'd built a strong relationship with him. Remember the principle? The depth of your relationship determines what? The depth of your coaching. I worked with Tyler Wall for 5 years since he was a freshman. 5 years. He stayed for the COVID year. He got that bonus year. He'd been out to my house in L.A., he spent a weekend, and I showed him and taught him some of these processes and things. We would have FaceTimes in between his games, more over and above what I did with the rest of the team. There was trust. He knew what I said to him, even if it was hard, was because I cared about him. It was coming from the right place, that I cared enough about him to confront him. I didn't want him to sabotage himself on my watch. And so he was the leader of the team. And last year, they ranked Wisconsin as number 6. And it scared me to death and actually disgusted me because I knew we were not that good. And I tried to tell them they weren't that good because they didn't want to listen to me that they weren't that good. It went right to their head that they were that good. And we were going to play Nebraska, who was unranked. This is what you call a trap game. You just got a high ranking. Everybody is going to bring their best stuff against you. They got everything to gain. They got nothing to lose, and we're doing it on their court. So I thought, well, we're going to be number six for about 1 week. That's about what it's going to last, because I could just see it coming based on the attitudes of the guys. I wasn't at the game, but I watched it on television, and I was disgusted with my friend Tyler Wall. And he had no energy. He was not leading the team. I could tell he was not taking this game seriously. He wasn't as prepared and crisp and as aggressive as he normally was. And he's the leader of the team, so guess what everybody else picked up on? That same thing. They didn't take it seriously either. They were going through the motions thinking this was going to be an easy win at Nebraska. Well, Nebraska took us into overtime, and they beat us. So I was going to be in the Wisconsin film room 4 days later before we played Purdue, who was the number two team in the country. And I had a conversation with Tyler, and I had it in front of the whole team. Now, you got to be real careful with that. You got to have a really strong relationship, and you got to be highly skilled to call somebody out and call them up. Don't just call people out. Call them up. Don't just leave them at failure. Point them back towards success. Get them committed to do something better. But I knew because of the relationship I had built, I could have this conversation with them. I have a series of questions I ask people. Again, lead with questions, my friends. Lead with questions, not just commands. And these questions are not accusations, they're questions. And they get people to discover and commit to how they're going to fix their own issues. Here's my first question. You could say this to someone who you just know they did not do their best last month. They did not do their best with that customer. Anytime someone doesn't do their best, and you know when that is, you can ask this series of questions. So I was in front of the team at the film room, and I said, Tyler, was that the best effort you could bring against Nebraska 4 days ago? Was I accusing or was I asking? I was asking. Was that the best effort you could bring against Nebraska 4 days ago? What do you think he said? Absolutely not. What would your best have looked like that didn't show up against Nebraska? Well, I would have been better prepared. I would have done X. I would have done Y. I would have done Z. Why do you think that didn't happen? Why do you think that didn't happen? I didn't take them seriously. And I asked that question to see if they're going to take responsibility for it or if they're going to blame somebody else. Because then it's a different conversation. Why do you think that didn't happen? I didn't work as hard leading up. I didn't practice as hard. I didn't take them seriously. I thought it'd be an easy win. He was very honest. So what can I expect to see going forward against Purdue tomorrow? I wasn't telling them, here's what you need to do against Purdue tomorrow. I said, so what can I expect to see you do differently against Purdue tomorrow? And he gave me a commitment. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. And then I always finish it with this. I appreciate your commitment to improve. I'm going to hold you to that. And you just anchor that commitment with a little bit of pounded fist there, very casually. I appreciate your commitment to improve. I'm going to hold you to that. So this is coaching with questions, leading with questions. Was that the best you could do last month? I mean, if it is, tell me, because we got to figure out how to improve that. No, it wasn't. What would your best have looked like that you didn't do last month? Well, I would have done this, this, and this. Why do you think that didn't happen? And they'll tell you. So, and then move them forward. Don't just call them out, call them up. Don't just call them out, call them up. So what can we expect to see from you going forward this month? And now they're giving you a commitment rather than you giving them a commitment. Do you know why that's important? They have no obligation to keep your word. They have a big obligation to keep their word. So when I can get them to say it and then anchor it, I appreciate your commitment to improve. I'm going to hold you to that. It changes things. They're bought in. They're part of the process. They took responsibility. They've told you what they're going to do. So now they're obligated to keep that commitment. We've got to develop these skills to have these skillful conversations with our people. This is one of those things that has got to be a skill. Some of us, we talk to people, it's just, it makes it worse. I used to do that. I lacked emotional control. I gave terrible feedback. Oh, I'd have a conversation with them, but it wasn't very good. And I would get sarcastic, and I would get condescending, and I would get emotional. I'd get loud. Sometimes I'd get profane. I'd get personal. I wouldn't separate the performer from the performance. And the message never got through because the way I delivered it was so distracting, it couldn't land. You got to work on your delivery. You got to learn how to talk to people. I go a little lower, go a little slower. I'm going to have a conversation. I don't need to whip out my big, bad accountability voice. I don't do that. Low, slow, casual conversation. Come here, let's have a conversation. Let's have a conversation about last month. Conversations are not offensive. They're easy to listen to. They're much more likely to get through. You don't need to raise your voice. You need to improve your skills. Coaching is big about feedback. You've got to develop the art of having skillful conversations. Watch your tone and inflection. Watch your body language. Watch your body language is facial expressions. It's this. It's much better to talk like this when you're talking about something tough. It's open. It's not threatening. Not like this. Because that's distracting. Get good at this stuff. Where do you find great people? Start with what you got. Start with the people that are there. Sometimes the great people you're looking for are right under your nose, and we're not doing the things I'm talking about here. We don't have clarity. We're not training them the right way. We're not coaching them the right way. We're not leading by the right example. We don't have relationships with them. And so what? We want to get rid of them and bring somebody else in and subject them to the same abuse? Not a great strategy. Not a great strategy. Start with what you got. Sometimes they're there. Now, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just not going to cut it, but you don't know unless you're doing the right stuff. And what I love about giving brutally honest feedback, here's the key, give brutally honest feedback, don't give it brutally. People need to hear the truth. Don't sugarcoat it. You're not going to help them grow by coddling them. Okay, give brutally honest feedback. Don't give it brutally. You can say some pretty tough, direct stuff that will get their attention and the same tone of voice I'm using now. Okay. How many of you struggle like I did with emotional control sometimes when you're giving feedback or holding people accountable? And to your credit, I see a lot of hands. It's the same in every audience. To your credit, you know why? I think because you care. You care. You don't get emotional about stuff you don't care about. You care, but you got to channel that caring a little more, you know, humanely. A little more humanely, okay? And so coaching, training, developing human capital. You know, here's the takeaway. Of course, we want to understand the depth of our relationship is going to determine how well all that works. They got to trust you. They got to know it's coming from the right place. They got to know that you really care about them and you're not just trying to humiliate them or make them look bad or feel bad. But one of my favorite job descriptions for a leader is to take the human capital we've been entrusted with and make it more valuable tomorrow than it is today. That's our goal. That's our role. To take the human capital we've been entrusted with and to make it more valuable tomorrow than it is today. And we do that through training and we do that through coaching. If you look up the definition of coaching, a process designed to improve performance. Notice that, improve performance. We're there to get people better, not just to maintain them, not just to keep them the way they are, to improve their performance. We've got to improve our skills to improve their performance. The fourth chapter in the book is called It's All Right to Aim High If You Have Plenty of Ammo. So I spend the first few chapters of the book talking about getting the team right, developing the team. And if you've done that, haven't you earned the right to shoot for something big? If you got the right people, it's all right to aim high if you got plenty of ammo. And so when we're talking about goals, really, there's vision, there's strategy, there's tactics. Vision, strategy, tactics. Vision is where you're going. Strategy is what you're going to do to get there. Tactics are how you're going to do it. Don't confuse the three. It all starts with where, then what, then how. Vision, strategy, and tactics are the where, the what, and the how. Here's where we're going. Okay, that's the easy part. That's the goal. Goals are fun. They're kind of easy. Now it gets a little harder. What are we going to do to get there? Okay, here's the strategies. Now it gets really hard. How are we going to do it? One of the strategies is we got to hold people accountable. Great strategy. How are we going to do it? What does that look like in our daily routine? What's that going to look like in our daily routine? The how is hard. The how is where the rubber meets the road. But what we want to do whenever you're planning for your organization, you want to narrow your focus on vision, strategy, and tactics. Don't be all over the place. Narrow your vision. In one of my books, I call your biggest goals the toughs, T-U-F-S, the ultimate few. The ultimate few. The one, two, or three biggest goals that are going to drive the other 20. If everything's important, nothing's important. So what are your toughs in 2025? The one, two, or three biggest goals that you're going to give disproportionate time, talent, and energy to, they're going to move the rest. And then keep your focus narrow. Now, not all strategies are created equal. Would you guys agree? Not everything brings an equal return. So we're looking for high impact targets. All right. And in military terms, these are centers of gravity. These are those high impact targets to where if we hit this, it may be the hard thing to hit, but it's going to bring a great return. You don't have time to do everything that'll move you towards your goal. So what are the handful of most essential strategies that are going to move us there? And then the next way to narrow your focus is with the tactics. What's that going to look like in our daily routine? I call them MAXAX, maximum activities, maximum activities. Here's a MAXAX. Listen to this. This will change your execution prowess. Out of the 40 things people may have to do every day, if they could only do four that are most predictive of reaching the goal they need to reach, what are they? Those are the MAXAX. They may have to do 40, they may have to do 20, but if they could only do four, what would they be? Well, we better get them pretty great at those things. Those are the things we need to get them great at. Those are the things that need to be scheduled. Those are the things we need to hold them accountable for every day. So many folks, they have these plans, and they're chasing too many goals with too many strategies, and they glorify busyness. People are doing a lot every day. It's not like they're idle, but we've got to stop the glorification of busyness. Effective execution is not about doing a lot of things. It's about doing fewer things that mean the most with greater excellence. It's about sometimes effective execution is knowing what to leave undone so you can get done what means the most. It's having that narrow focus, these goals. What I like about a narrow focus, it's easy to say no to nonsense. It's easy to say no to the lower return things because you've already decided what the higher return things are. You can't say no unless you've already determined what you got to say yes to, what you most resolutely must say yes to. And so whatever your goals are for this year, make sure you may have 20 of them, but you should be giving disproportionate time, energy, talent to the one, two, or three. That'll power your organization. Be selective with your strategies and narrow those MAXAX down. And let me tell you something about your MAXAX. Your MAXAX should highly influence your training. If it's a high impact activity, shouldn't those be the things we better be getting people great at every day? Repetition, working on it. I have an acronym in my book. I have a chapter in my book called EDMED, EDMED, E-D-M-E-D, EDMED. Every day means every day. Every day means every day. EDMED is a mindset. EDMED is a lifestyle. EDMED is doing the right things when you don't feel like doing it and feel better because you did it. We've got to have that EDMED mindset. Our people need to have it as well, and the only way they'll develop it is if we're holding them accountable for those daily activities we pre-prescribed as non-negotiable. It's not rocket science, gang. It's basic blocking and tackling, but we have to repeat it over again every single day. So the main concept with strategy, vision, tactics, narrow your focus. Narrow your focus. If everything is important, nothing is important. Your priorities are not the good goals. They're not the great goals. They're the best goals. And sometimes it's the good and the great ones that get in the way of the best ones. Focus like a laser on what matters most. And that takes a lot of discipline. And we have to really work on it. I love this next one. Chapter 5 is about your leadership 12-pack. It's about you getting better, me getting better. I give you 12 different areas to look at to improve. I want to talk about personal development. I know you're into it because that's why you're here. Personal development. Here's the concept. Your business gets better when you do. Your business gets better when you do. You get better when you go to work on yourself. I heard that from Jim Rohn many years ago. Don't wish it were easier. Wish you were better. And you don't get better by showing up. You get better by stepping up because growth is not automatic. Getting older is automatic. Death, it's automatic. But growth needs to be intentional. So as we start this new year, what are your growth objectives? Intentional means on purpose. On purpose. What are you going to purposely do to develop a certain skill, increase your knowledge, improve a habit, upgrade your mindset? Those are all personal development possibilities. Most people have no plan. They know they need a better mindset, but they're not doing anything to work on it. I ask people all the time, I said, how many of you would agree? And I'm going to ask you this. Having the right mindset every day is more influential to success than skills, knowledge, talent, or experience. How many of you would agree with me with that? I'm with you. Now, that being said, how much time do you spend intentionally every day working on yours? A lot of people don't spend any time. Nothing. There's nothing. No, we just admitted it's a really big deal, and now we're saying, you know what? We're not really doing it. So what are your growth objectives? The skill? You want to get better at accountability? Set that as a 90-day goal. I like quarterly objectives. You can really dig deep in a quarter. You can certainly develop a better habit in a quarter. So first I have the objective, accountability, recruiting, interviewing, whatever. Now get a resource, the book, the course, the class, and then hold yourself accountable for it. Get intentional. Your business is going to get better when you do. And so many people think because they show, they grow. Just because you show doesn't mean you grow. Growth has got to be intentional. And so I want you thinking about your growth objectives. I just talked about training your people. Let's talk about being a better trainer. Maybe that's one of your goals. I got to be a better coach. I got to be better at teaching people. I got to be more strategic. You can get resources for all those things, but you're not going to do it if you don't get specific. Your business gets better when you do. You got to make time to get better, though. People say, I just don't have the time to read a book. I had my uncle tell me that. I just don't have the time to read a book. I don't have the, I said, you have the time, Uncle Rick. You do something else with it. You're in three fantasy football leagues. You're addicted to video games. I mean, you play online poker. I said, I'm not judging those things, but you can't say you don't have the time. You have the time. You choose to do something else with it. If we're going to grow, we've got to redeem the time. Redeem means trade it in for something more valuable. You're not going to get more time. We'd all raise our hand if we said, who needs more time? Everybody's hand would go up. And then I just tell you, well, you're not going to get it. So you got to figure out how to maximize what you have. I think people waste their downtime. Downtime is where you get ahead. Downtime is where you get an edge. Whether it's in a commute, if you're commuting every day, why would you listen to the news? Where 80 to 90% of what you hear is negative and it's a distraction, and now you're going to get to the workplace and infect everybody else's space with that nonsense. I am not going to let the media drop its drawers and take a dump on my mindset when I'm on my way to my arena. I mean, you're like an athlete going to your arena. Oh, downtime. The best salespeople I know, they take their downtime, they turn it into prime time. They're role-playing a script. They're practicing a presentation. They're staying sharp. Those of you that have people that are in sales, let me tell you something. You better manage their downtime because they don't get better in front of customers. They get exposed in front of customers. They get better with what you have them doing in between customers. Have weekly training themes, certain things they're working on in their downtime. Productive people are more motivated people. But you got to set the pace. You got to set the tone. Show them what you're learning. Show them what you're growing. I mean, how can we take people on journeys we haven't been on if we're not growing? How can we export to them what we don't have? We haven't, some of us, we got 20 years experience, not in this room maybe, but some people, I see them in businesses, they have 20 years experience. They haven't learned something new since like Moby Dick was a minnow. They just keep repeating the same stuff again and again. It's irrelevant. They become irrelevant. They skip right down the yellow brick road smack into a wall of irrelevance. It happens again and again. Get some growth objectives for yourself. This is a fresh year. There's a freshness. There's a newness about a fresh year. It's like, I'm going to work on me. This is the year I work as hard on me as I do in my job. And if I work as hard on me as I do in my job, it's going to be a lot easier to work in my job. And I'm going to be able to take some people to a place I can't take them right now because I'm not good enough to get them there. Work on you. It could be a habit. I tell you what, I see this. I bet you see it too. So many people I know are one habit away from an entirely different level. Entirely different level. One habit, either a good one that they start or a bad one that they renounce. One habit away. You know, so if you want to improve your habits, that's a great goal. Get the book by James Clear. Get Atomic Habits. Watch his masterclass, 10 segments of 10 minutes each on habits. It's a very easy masterclass. And make that your growth objective for the next quarter. Then all these other things you're going to try to do, if you got better habits, you'll probably actually get them done. Would you agree? I mean, it starts to work out that way. And so set the objective, resource the objective, hold yourself accountable, and share it, because you learn better if you're sharing. The next chapter, I talk about the 6 temptations of successful organizations. I don't have time to go over all 6, but I want to talk about probably the biggest one. I believe it's temptation number 5, is the leaders of successful organizations stop holding people what? What do you think goes there? Accountable. Well, because it doesn't seem as necessary, because we're doing really well. Good times bring bad habits, would you agree? I've learned this from coaching, and it's the same in business. You coach better when you're losing. You coach better when you're losing. There's no margin for error. You're on red alert. You have a sense of urgency. You're making better decisions. You don't have foolish options anymore. You coach better when... So those of you that are struggling right now, use the struggles to make you stronger. Don't get into the blame game. Don't look out the window. Look in the mirror. Analyze these things. And accountability, this is what we get away from when we're winning. Prosperity rises, urgency falls. As prosperity rises, the work ethic diminishes. As prosperity rises, intensity can wane. I tell you what, I appreciate prosperity, but it has some pitfalls. We start to get a little bit arrogant. We let up. There's no pressure. There's no urgency. And so we have to understand accountability is one of the things that usually starts to go away. Now, I will suggest this to you. The best time to hold people accountable is when things are going well. It's when things are going well. So they keep going well. Usually, what do? We wait for a bad month, wait for a bad quarter, we wait, and now we're reacting. The best time to fix the roof is when the sun is shining. If you want to keep your culture strong, have those conversations while people are doing well. Raise the bar while they're doing well. Stay engaged while they're doing well. Sometimes, you know what happens when we're doing well? We get aloof. We just put things on remote control. General Patton said, it is almost impossible to be aloof and effective at the same time. You got to stay in the mix. You got to stay in the mix. You got to continue to lead. Now, you got to keep clarity clear. Remember, there's no accountability without it. And you could have clarity really great now in January and in March. It leaks, man. It leaks. Clarity leaks. It's like water seeping through the bottom of a bucket. If you're not living it, breathing it, walking it, talking it, reminding people about it, it fades. You got to not just have it clear, keep it clear. You want to change your culture, change your conversations, talk more about the things that matter most. Really, to me, accountability is a conversation. I think the most effective way to fix most performance defects is having an effective, skillful conversation with somebody. I think if you do that, very often it doesn't have to be elevated. We have to learn how to do that. If you want to change a behavior, change the consequence for that behavior. If somebody's coming in late every day, they're probably going to keep coming in late every day till there's a consequence for coming in late. You at least need to talk to them about it. And if they're coming in late and there's no consequence, it will continue. What you tolerate will continue. Don't be surprised when it does. What you permit will persist. What you permit, you actually promote. And so you know what's going to ultimately define your culture? The worst behavior you've decided to tolerate. The worst behavior, the lowest performance that you've decided to tolerate, to overlook, to rationalize, to compromise on, that eventually defines your culture. And too often, because we're not good at holding people accountable, we drop the bar to accommodate the person rather than stretch the person up to reach our bar. Now, you need two things. You need the right skill set and the right mindset to beat this temptation. Accountability requires both. The right skill set, how to create clarity, how to have conversations, how to do some of the things I've talked about. Call people out, call them up, talk to them the right way. That's skill, okay? But you also got to have the right mindset. Because sometimes, would you agree, we know how to do it, we still don't want to do it. We don't want to do it. We don't know how they're going to take it. Might not turn out well. Don't feel like doing it. Don't let your feelings hijack your future. You got to stop letting your feelings determine whether you're going to do the right thing or not. You got to have the right mindset. And here's one thing that'll help you. Stop looking at accountability as something you're doing to someone and realize it's something you're doing for them. As long as you think you're doing it to them, you'll be reluctant. You'll apologize for it. You'll say, I hate to have to do this. And that's terrible psychology. Because you've just made them the victim and you the bad guy. I don't know about you. I don't hate to have to do my job. I might say to them, I hate that you created a situation to where this conversation's not necessary. But we're getting ready to have it. You see, if you care about your people, you confront them. You will not let them walk off the cliff on your watch because you don't have the skills or the guts to do your job. Get better at this. This needs to be a skill. Some of you know this. You do your kids the right way, but you don't duplicate it into the workplace. You have do's and don'ts for your kids. And when they don't do the do or they do the don't, there's a consequence for it. Not because you're mean or a bully or you don't like them. It's because you love them and you want better for them. It's the same when you're growing a team. You're doing it for them. Now, they may not see it that way. So let me take this pressure off of you. You can't control how they see it. You can't control how they respond to it. That's on them. You'll learn a lot about your people when you tell them the tough stuff. Some of them will show how coachable they are, and some of them will show the opposite. What you're responsible for is doing what you can control, having the conversation. And the longer you wait, the less it means. Shovel the piles while they're small. Get there quickly, firmly, specifically, respectfully. If it happens again and again and again, it's no longer a pile, it's a hill, it's harder to move, it might have become a habit. People usually will not fix themselves. People out of alignment do not work themselves back into alignment, not without outside intervention. They need outside intervention. The best outside intervention, your conversation. If you're driving a car that's out of alignment, driving it longer, harder, faster is not just going to work its back into alignment. It's going to get back into alignment with outside intervention. Human beings are the same way. If you care about your people, you'll have these conversations with them. You'll get really good at it. Because I'll tell you what, think about who helped you grow in your life. I bet it wasn't someone who pampered you. I bet it wasn't someone who let you get by. I bet it wasn't someone who didn't expect much from you. And I'll tell you, it's the same with the people you have. We think we're going to help them grow by hugging them, burping them, nursing them, bribing them, begging them, berating them, bullying them. No. That's not going to work. No one will ever look at you and say, you know what? Thanks for being easy on me. It changed my life. It's never going to happen. You think about the people that impacted you. They probably made you uncomfortable. They were probably really firm, but they were fair. They expected a lot. They told you the truth. They wouldn't let you slide, and it made a difference in your life. This pampered age, this is a way to impact people, hold them accountable. That's a skill. That should be one of your growth objectives. If you're good at it, get great at it. If you're not good at it, you got to get to that point. We got to go there. There's too much at stake not to be able to do this. Final chapter of Up Your Business is about follow-through. And that's a good thing to talk about right now, because as this seminar and these seminars that you've been through are winding down, it's time to go back and roll up your sleeves, isn't it? It's time to go back and get to work. And you know, you hear people say things, and I think they mean well, but they come to a seminar and they say, you know what? I know what I got to go back and do. Knowing the problem is half the battle. That is a bunch of baloney. Knowing the problem is half the battle. You haven't even started to fight the battle yet. Well, I have a plan. That's half the battle. No. You haven't even fought it yet. If I'm 40 pounds overweight and I know it's because I eat too much and I don't exercise, I'm still 40 pounds overweight. Half the battle's not gone. If knowing why I was overweight was half the battle, 20 pounds would fall off my rear end magically. It's like, wow, now I just got to fight the other half and I'm there. And if I put a plan together, I'm going to go to the gym these 3 days a week, and I'm going to limit my calorie intake to 1,500 calories. I got this great plan. That's not half the battle either, because I'm still what? If you're still 40 pounds overweight, you got to fight the battle. Knowing is nothing. Life rewards action. Knowing is nothing. You got to get up off your knowledge and your talent and your experience and your wisdom and do something with it. You have to take action, right action, consistent action, whether you feel like taking the action or not, and then you feel better because you took it. You got to fight the battle. It's not half done until you're halfway there. Does that make sense? And the number one thing that'll stop you from doing some of these things you're committing to in my presentation and in other presentations, you got all these lists of notes, is you're going to have days where you don't feel like it. How many of you have days where you don't feel like doing the right stuff? I have them. There's a lot of days I don't feel like doing the right stuff. And here's where you have to grow. You can't go through life feeling your way into acting. You need to start acting your way into feeling. If you only act when you feel like it, you're not going to do it a lot of the times. I don't feel like it, so I'm not going to the gym. I don't feel like it, so I'm not going to hold them accountable. I don't feel like it, so I'm not going to hold the meeting. You're going to be all over the place. You're going to be very inconsistent. Here's growth. Here's the next step for some of us. No, I don't feel like it. I'll be honest with myself. I don't feel like it. But it's the right thing to do. So I'm going to go ahead and act. I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to feel better after I've done it. In that respect, discipline is a morale builder. You always feel better about yourself when you do what's hard, but you do it anyway. At the end of it, it feels pretty darn good, and that builds your confidence. And now you're more likely to want to duplicate that positive feeling throughout the process again and again. So don't let your feelings stop you. Don't let inconvenience stop you from going back and doing. Don't worry about if it's unpopular. Don't worry about if it's not cheap. Don't worry about if it's hard. Those are the things that usually make the difference. Because I'll tell you what, you probably have a list of stuff that's going to really be hard if you're going to go back and do a lot of that. But you know what else is hard? Staying like you are is hard. Losing ground is hard. Having to continue to revisit the same issues with the same people in the same situations again and again and again because they're not getting any better, that's hard. Losing sleep at night because you're missing your goals or you can't pay bills or you're not sure if you're going to make it, that's hard too. Losing people and having to replace them because you're not doing the things you can to get them better, that's hard too. It's hard either way. So pick your hard. It's hard either way. It's hard to go back and do it the right way, and it's hard to suffer the consequences of neglect for not doing it at all. And I don't know about you. I want to have a little common sense. If it's hard either way, I'm going to pick the hard that brings me return. I'm going to pick the hard that actually gets me to where I want to go. You got to follow through. That's where the battle gets won. All right. So that's up your business, and I just want to spend a few minutes then, next 20 minutes, sharing some of the takeaways about really getting you right before you're at work. And you're going to find a lot of this in the new book, Elevate Your Excellence. Elevate Your Excellence is the most non-business book I've written. It's more about getting you right so you can get your business right. It's so applicable. The feedback I've had on it is it's just been encouraging. Actually, it's about being excellent before you're at work. This is a different level for some of us. I'm a big believer from the minute you wake up in the morning, you should be stacking wins. We have to remember this. Please stick with me here. Every time you do less than your best, you start to establish that as a standard. It doesn't matter if it's leaving dishes in the sink. It doesn't matter if it's leaving an unmade bed. Whenever you decide to do your best, that becomes your standard. You only have one conscience, and you're training it over and over again with every decision you make. So I want to establish my standard before I'm in the workplace. I want to do things before I get to work that create momentum, that make me have a high standard when I walk in. You never want to walk into work looking for your first win. You never see, great performance begins before it begins. Athletes understand this really well. We need to understand it more in business. Great performance begins long before that athlete walks into the gym. And whenever I work with athletes, I put them on all kinds of processes from the minute they wake up in the morning. So they build confidence. So they feel better about themselves. So they stack wins. So they create momentum. And that's what they're bringing into the gym. And we can do the same thing in our own various life arenas. Now, doing everything with excellence doesn't mean you're great at everything. Nobody is great at everything. But you do your best with everything. You're not cutting a corner. You're not making an excuse. You're not compromising. And so I was talking to an athlete one time, young guy, college kid, was at Rutgers, and I asked him, I said, Paul, did you make your bed this morning? Because if you're going to work with me, you're going to wake the bed in the morning. You're going to start with a win. You're not going to cut a corner. You're not going to make excuses for yourself. You're going to do your best. Did you make your bed? He said, no. I said, if I were coming over to visit you today, would you make your bed? He said, yes. I said, Paul, why would you have a higher standard for someone else than you have for yourself? I said, you need to set the tone early. Great performance begins before it begins. I said, you're going to make your bed, and you're going to send me a picture of it every day for the next 2 weeks because I want to see that it's made well, that you're not just cutting a corner. See, don't just do it to do it. Don't do it to get through it. Don't just do it so you can say you did it. That's just going through the motions. Do it the best you can. And so I said, I'm going to give you a grooming process. Some of these athletes I work with, they got the grooming. Basically, it's a two-minute thing to perfume last night's funk before they go into the gym this morning. I mean, I'm always astonished that they have girlfriends. I said, well, they must have low bars, and you just happen to get over it. But I said, we're going to put you on this grooming process to where you're going to do things that follow a process. You're going to do them in the same order. You're going to develop discipline. You're going to feel good about yourself. You're going to put some nutrition in your body. You're going to hydrate. From the minute you wake up, you're going to hydrate because you wake up dehydrated. This is an easy win. Drink water. There's a chapter in the book on hydration. 71% of us right now are dehydrated, statistically. 100% of us will wake up tomorrow morning dehydrated. Every day, because we have moisture going out for hours through breath or perspiration and nothing coming in. Now, here's the problem with that. It's not just that you're thirsty. Your blood thickens. It all matters. Gang, how you do anything is how you do everything. You want an edge, you pay attention to all of it. When you're dehydrated, your blood thickens. When your blood thickens, man, your organs are having to pump harder just to perform normal functions. That's why you're lethargic. Some people have no energy in the morning. When you're dehydrated, you have a foggy memory. You're irritable. You're constipated. It gives you bad breath. None of that's helping perform. Some people wake up in the morning, they got breath that would knock a buzzard off a turd wagon. It's like, for goodness sakes, drink some water and floss the salmon out of your teeth before you go to bed that night so it doesn't bake for 8 hours. Little wins. And so yeah, they give a whole new meaning to Jimi Hendrix's song, Purple Haze. They wake up and they exhale. It's like, good Lord. And I said, you're going to drink a bottle of water. You're going to keep it on your nightstand. You're going to drink a bottle of water when you wake up. I said, you're not going to leave the dishes in the sink. You're going to spend at least 10 minutes doing some intentional things to work on your mindset, because mindset's like a body. It will not take care of itself. You got to do certain things. You got to stop doing certain things. I want my athletes work stacking 8 or 9 wins. There's a chapter in the book called Start Stacking Wins Early. Let me tell you why, my friends. Momentum is earned. Momentum is earned. And you never want to walk into your workplace looking for momentum. You want to walk into your workplace with momentum because of the excellence you've demonstrated before you're there. Does that make sense? Great performance begins before it begins. Some people, they stack losses. They're walking into the workplace, they're eight losses in the hole. They left an unmade bed. They did a funky grooming routine. They dehydrated. They put garbage in their body. They left the dishes in the sink. They listened to the media on the way to work. It's just, and it takes them a while to get in that rhythm. Start stacking wins early. So that's one of the big concepts of this book. And because what I want people to do, what I want them to understand, is that you want excellence to be part of your nature. The only way you can make it part of your nature is if you're doing it in all your various life arenas. You're giving all you have to what you've got. You're giving all you have to what you've got. When you're with your church group, you're doing the best you can. When you're with your family, you're locked in, you're engaged, you're being where your feet are. So many of us today with our technology, we're one place physically, we're someplace else mentally, but you're giving all you have to wherever you're at, to whatever you've got. You want excellence to not be a switch you have to turn on and off. You know, people think, well, what do I do away from work? But here's the problem. If it's something that you're not consistent with, one day you're really going to need to be excellent at something, and you're going to reach it for that switch, and you can't find it because it's not natural for you. It hasn't become part of your nature. You got to make it part of your nature by being excellent, doing all the best you can in all of your life arenas, again and again and again. And that's like if you're giving feedback. If you want to get better at giving feedback to your employees, having skillful conversations with your employees, have more skillful conversations with your spouse. Have more skillful conversations with your kids. If you talk to your spouse like a jerk, if you talk to your kids disrespectfully, those are the reps you're putting in. That's the conditioning you're giving to your conscience. And it's eventually going to come out with a customer or an employee. You want to know one speed, excellence, in all of your various life arenas. The book talks a lot about that. It talks about sleep. People think if they don't get enough sleep, it just makes them feel sluggish the next day. My goodness, if only if that were that easy. The longest chapter in the book is how to master the art of sleep. There's a sleep scientist by the name of Matthew Walker who did some incredible studies at Berkeley. And if you are underslept, if you consistently get less than 7 hours of sleep at night, it's not just that you're not well rested. It affects your memory. Your short-term memories are not getting downloaded into your long-term memory. It affects your emotions. You think that affects performance? You overreact to things. You're too sensitive to things because your amygdala, which is the emotional part of your brain, doesn't reestablish strong connections with the prefrontal cortex, which is the CEO of your brain. So if you're underslept, those things don't get reestablished. They don't get soothed. They don't get calmed. And so you're already on edge the next day. And not only are you overly emotional, but you're misreading the emotions of others. So it's your memory. It's your emotion. Your immune system doesn't have a chance to rebuild, so you're going to be sick more often. But even worse than that, it affects your brain health. They've connected being underslept to dementia because you have plaque that builds up on your brain and you have something in your brain called the glymphatic system. This chapter could save your life. If you only read one chapter, read this one. You have a sewage system in your brain called the glymphatic system. And if you are underslept, it doesn't get fully activated. And that glymphatic system is what cleans off those proteins, that plaque that builds up on your brain. And if you're underslept, it builds and it builds and it builds and it starts to kill brain cells. Lots of them. It not only affects your quality of life, it affects the length of your life. There's a lot going on here. And so it's getting the little things right, breathing the right way. When you're dealing in a tense situation, you got to learn how to breathe. Number one thing you teach athletes, you got to learn how to breathe, man, in tense situations. Usually when people get tense, they stop breathing. Right? Somebody cuts you off in traffic. You see it when somebody's in your face. You're like this, and it's the worst thing you can do. Breathe in through the nose. 18% more oxygen gets to the brain if you're breathing in deeply through the nose. That's good because that helps you think clearly. Would you agree in a tense situation, you need to be thinking clearly? And then you breathe out slowly through the mouth. That gets rid of the tension and puts you in the moment. So before you go have that accountability conversation, a couple of deep, intentional breaths just puts you in the moment. You're thinking clearly. The tension's out. Now go have that conversation. It all matters. There's so many little ways we can become excellent. In the book, I have a chapter called How to Have Good Crappy Days. It's very real world. It started from teaching my athletes how to have good crappy games. You got those games where you're doing all the right stuff. You worked hard, but nothing's working. You made every shot in practice. You were hot, and now that the spotlight's on, nothing's going in. You can't hit the side of a barn. And so very, very, very much that happens, very often that happens in the workplace. Nothing's going right. And we start saying, what's next? What could happen next? And we start focusing on what we don't have instead of here's what we still can do. Here's what we do have. Let's give all we have to what we got. If you're having those days where nothing seems to be going right, rally around what you have. Don't fret about what you don't. If you have 50% of your effectiveness working for you, give 100% to that 50%. Give all you have to what you got. It keeps you in the game. Don't wish it were easier. Don't say tomorrow will be better. It's not tomorrow. You need to deal with what is. And right now, it's tough, and it's a bit of a train wreck. I got to stay in the game. What can I do? What do I have? Let me give all I have to that, and maybe I can turn this around. I can create momentum. I can start to move forward. And so these are things to work on, being excellent, having an excellent attitude, even in those tough situations. I remember when I was talking to Paul, so many people have the same idea. Dave, what's the big deal about making the bed? And I said, you're missing the point, Paul. It's not making the bed that's the big deal. It's the person you become in the process of making it. It's the person you become in the process of not cutting a corner, of getting a win early in the day, of doing something that makes you feel good about yourself, of holding you to a higher standard, of building confidence, of feeling good about yourself later at that night when you see it. Someone who's making yourself uncomfortable and you're doing it anyway. That's the process. It's the person you become in the process of doing it. The made bed is just the end result. You know, it's just, you got to look at all your decisions. They all matter because they're all teaching your brain. They're all conditioning your brain either toward a high standard or toward a low standard. And that's what Elevate Your Excellence is really about. I talk about EdMed. I said, make EdMed a lifestyle. Be consistent in all your life arenas, because not be consistency is part of your nature. You know, some people are very consistent at work. They don't consistently go to the gym. They're very consistent at work. They're not consistently kind and engaged with their family. Make EdMed a lifestyle. I talk about in the book, learn things outside of work. Pursue your interests and your hobbies, because it still works your brain. Learning is energizing. It makes you uncomfortable with some things. You're trying new things. Don't you think that'll make you more valuable in the workplace? Be outstanding. I'm taking an Italian wine scholar course. I'm looking at buying a place over there. Best way to learn about Italy, learn about the wines. 20 different regions, they all have different wines. It's fantastic. Have all these wines arriving, and I'm having to memorize things and read things, and it keeps my mind active. And when I remember one week I had wines like arriving, cases of wine like all week. My wife's like, Dave, are we having a party? I said, no, I'm cramming for an exam on Monday. You know, it's like, I never knew higher learning could be so intoxicating. It's like, it's crazy. And then a lot of them, they're not expensive wines. They're just obscure. And I had a lot of them that came in that I needed to sample when I got back from out of town. And I get back from out of town, and they're gone. And my wife said, yeah, well, some of the girls came over, and we thought we'd try them because you talk about how good they are. I said, you drank my homework. I mean, literally, you drank my homework. And so, you know, just learn things outside of work. Keep fresh. Keep engaged. Embrace excellence. You'll find lots of ways to do that in the book. I think the hydration, the breathing, the sleep chapters, you don't usually see those in anything business related, but they not only affect your business, they affect your life. So to close this out, You probably got pages of notes from all these presentations. You've heard good intentions. You do need to go back and start. And just remember this. I'm not a technical person. I'm not a scientific person. I'm not an academic person. But there's a second law of thermodynamics that applies very well in business. It basically says this. Things don't naturally wind up. They naturally wind down unless outside energy is applied. That's your business. That's my business. It is not going to naturally wind up. It is going to naturally wind down unless outside energy is applied. My friends, you're that outside energy. If not you, who? You've got to be that catalyst. I'll tell you, that's one of my favorite definitions for leaders, catalyst. If you look at the definition of catalyst, a person or thing that makes something happen, that needs to be us. A person or thing that makes something happen. You've got to be that person. That's why I said you got to walk into work with momentum. You got to walk in knowing what your priorities are. You ought to have the 8 or 9 wins already stacked. There's a sign above my office that says, be the boxer, not the bag. That's my motto. The only way I can be the boxer is if I go in there and I know what to hit. I want to set the tone. I want to set the pace. I already want to be moving. I already want to be rolling. Too many times we go in after having stacked losses. We go in with no momentum at all. We go in a reactive mode, and we're the bag. We're responding. We're reacting. We're doing damage control. We're putting out fires, and we never get in a rhythm that day, and it very often is because we weren't in a rhythm before we got there. It all matters. How you do anything is how you do everything because of the conditioning that takes place in your brain. So be that catalyst. Be the person that brings that energy and winds those things up. And just be relentlessly consistent. And if you're inconsistent in areas, do what I said earlier. Get better at them, and you're more likely to do them. You won't keep dodging them. I hope this has been helpful. I hope the 7 takeaways from the book and then tying it in with the elevating your excellence, which actually gets you ready for work before you're at work, I think I can take you to a whole new level if you'll actually do what's there. And so if I said something in here throughout the day that offended you, that's completely your fault. You shouldn't be that soft. I just thought I would throw that out there. I just make friends like this everywhere I go, you know. If you're easy to offend, you're easy to control, right? I mean, yeah, people can control your attitude, your conversations, your emotions, your whole bit. You guys have been great. You've been very attentive. You locked in. I have a feeling you're going to do a lot with everything that you've gathered here today. Best wishes. God bless you. Keep growing and going. And hope I get to see you again sometime soon. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Yes.
Wow. Wow.